Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to I'd Sooner Forget This, a podcast where guests share with you an artifact from their past that they'd sooner the world didn't know about. Like my first ever tweet back in 2010, which was, okay, so what have I learned in my first 30 minutes on Twitter? You need to sell yourself and Twitter is not spelt twatter. Productive. I'm Daryl Smith, and joining me today is comedian and musician David Hoare.
Hi there.
Hi. What have you brought with yourself?
I have brought with me some musical artifacts from my past. I nearly brought with me a few other things because I listened to your other podcasts and I listened to Ellen Waddell talk about comics she'd made when she was younger. And I suddenly remembered I tried to make a webcomic with my friends and I listened to Reardon talking about his video he made for school and thought, we tried to make a horror film when we were in year 8 and that's in the ether somewhere. And there's bad photos of me at my MySpace, there's bad photos of me at my prom on MySpace with a bad haircut. And there's obviously bad videos of me doing stand-up somewhere because we all start somewhere. But I have song lyrics and music I have made throughout my life.
Wow. And so the first lyrics that we're going to look at, when are they from?
I'm guessing 2004, 2005, when I was about 15, 14, 15. Possibly younger, though, noting how much they seem to be influenced by Linkin Park.
That is a very exciting statement.
although generous to myself, because I mean, Linkin Park were better than this.
Well, let's hear it and then we can judge that statement.
This is untitled, but it begins, people screaming at the man who's hearing nothing because he's deaf. Feelings calling you to mourning at the thought of your own death. Making the decision about having a choice for which one you wanna choose. I said wanna, not wanting. But in the end, you know it doesn't matter because your conscience says you're gonna lose. Definitely couldn't spell conscience either. It's like, it's bad. And then I've got some bits crossed out, but they're still legible, which is apparently not good enough for this song. I still made it into it, which is, you know that you need to be aware of what's out there. So much opportunity wasted because of indecision and the inability to dare. Which is poignant, but apparently not good enough for the song. People trying to get by on an insecure, uncertain plan. Taking shortcuts and skipping corners by cutting out the middle man. But if you cut him out, you know that you will not survive. They will find you and they will try to make you do your time. In the end, you get born. Try to get by, but then you'll die. But listen to the middleman, and then you'll have time to live your life to the full.
You just gave up on rhyming at the end.
Well, live your life to the full is written in big letters at the bottom. So I'm imagining that was kind of the big, you know, maybe that was my bridge section of the song. I feel physically hot from embarrassment after reading that.
Have you any idea what that song's meant to be about?
Apparently a middleman. I thought I know what that is. Not, I wouldn't have known what a middleman was then. I, People screaming at the man who's hearing nothing because he's deaf. Is he the middleman?
What is the middleman? Do you remember writing it?
I remember that, like, reading that lyric is the sort of thing I remember thinking, yeah, this is cool. I don't know what it means, but I don't know what most of the other song lyrics mean in songs, and they seem cool. I think I was attempting to be deep, but possibly thinking that being deep just meant being mysterious and not writing things that actually had any point or anything.
Yeah, so you weren't... You weren't writing the song about anything that you wanted to write about. You're writing that song about something that you think people write about.
I think so, yeah. There's some other bits crossed out. Cheating people out of things by cutting out the middleman. Yeah, I crossed that out again. Not good enough for this song. I must have, yeah. Maybe I'd heard the phrase. I used to like hear phrases. Like I remember hearing the phrase utopia. Looking it up, and then I wrote like 7 songs with the word utopia in it. Can't find any of them now. But so I probably heard the phrase middleman and was like, yeah, the middleman. I'll write a song about that.
Not knowing what that even is. Did you do anything with this song? Like at the time, were you playing a musical instrument?
I was definitely playing guitar by this point. I started playing guitar in year 8, so it would have been like 12. This could be lyrics for... Me and my friends formed a band and never played a note together, but we used to meet, like, every Tuesday. And we were like, one day we're going to get this band together. We called ourselves Anti-Scale because of words we put together, I believe. And then we'd meet together, and I think we had 3 guitarists, no bassist, and a drummer who never came to any of the meetings because he lived in Luton. We all lived in Harpenden.
So you were meeting up to talk about a band without your instruments?
There might have been like a microphone in the room, which it was like an amp mic combo. So I think there was like a Squire Strat and like a 10 watt amp and a microphone. And I probably wrote down these lyrics being like, I'll write the lyrics and we'll just work it out from there. So it could be from that, but it could be post Anti-Scale as well.
So what were you talking about in those meetings?
It was probably half like, yeah, let's write a song about this. Or I think we just sat around and listened to Hybrid Theory. And then we'd be like, we should form a band like this. And then maybe one of us would play guitar riffs. And then maybe one of us... We probably only met like 4 or 5 times.
I just find that fascinating that you're meeting up with people to be in a band, mm-hmm. but then not playing together.
Yeah.
It would be like cycle enthusiasts meeting in a pub and talking about bikes, yet none of them ever... Cycling. Seeing any of the other ones on a bike.
Yeah, that's about as far as that band went.
And do you still speak to any of those people?
Yeah, sure. I'm still kind of in contact with a few of them, yeah. I haven't discussed with them Anti-Scale in a long time. Maybe I will next time I speak to them.
The thing is that as Anti-Scale never played together, you don't know how great Anti-Scale's version of this untitled track could have been.
I'm imagining a lot of power chords. Lot, probably in drop D.
This is basically you trying to sound like Linkin Park.
Oh, yeah.
If you're 15, that must have been one of the first bands that you properly got into.
Yeah, I went Limp Bizkit, then Linkin Park. I really, really liked that Mission Impossible theme tune, Take a Look Around.
Oh, yes.
Which is, I still think, is pretty good, but obviously with kind of rose-tinted spectacles. But, like, yeah, I had a red cap, and I was a big Grebo. Basically, I really, really like being a Grebo.
Grebo. Now that is a word that I've not heard in years.
Wow. I have a song that's recorded that I performed up until a few years ago called "The Grebo Song" about being a dirty, greasy Grebo.
What made you a Grebo?
Being a Grebo, you needed baggy jeans, you need a band T-shirt, a chain, skateboard shoes, the willingness to skate. And owning a skateboard, but not really the ability to do it. And basically, you try and grow your hair out, and then every like 2 months, your mum would force you to get a haircut. And you'd ask if you could go to Brixton Academy and see Limp Bizkit live, and they were like, you're 12. No.
I remember, I feel like I was slightly involved in the Grebo-ness. I remember always hanging out at a skate park, not owning a skateboard.
Oh, yeah.
And having
you'd see vans. Someone that, yeah, Vans, DCs, You'd have like a World Industries t-shirt or something like that. And you'd listen to Limp Bizkit, Linkin Park, Papa Roach, Slipknot, Kitty.
Don't remember Kitty. Blink 182? I know they're a little softer than what a lot of those groups. Think
new metal kids listen to pop punk as well. So a lot of like Blink 182 and Green Day and Sum 41 was all kind of thrown in, but that was kind of like light relief for I'm so sad because my mum won't let me grow my hair.
Yes. It's weird. That was a strange time in music, like Evanescence.
Oh, yeah. And it's like kind of the combination of hip hop and metal with none of the integrity of either.
Yeah.
Horrendously depressing. But because it was put to like, you're like, yeah, this speaks to, and you're 13 and you don't really know what problems are. And you're just like, this speaks to me so much. This is my life. And then you listen to it several years later and you're like, oh, I didn't. You're like, what problems did I have? None, really.
Yeah. Totally. So when I look at...
Especially in middle-class suburbia.
Yeah. Well, I look at all the poems that I wrote when I was exact same age. Like, they're all so depressing. I'm like, I don't remember being sad at the time. I remember quite liking everything.
Well, finding these lyrics, I sent my mum into my old bedroom and she found them in a box, in a folder marked geography. And she was just reading them down the phone to me, which is a really fun exercise where she was just like, is this embarrassing enough? Is this embarrassing enough? And then she'd find ones that were just really depressing. And she was like, you were la-ho-ho.
That's interesting. How did that feel with your mum reading them to you?
A bit like reading it out, just funny but embarrassed and just kind of trying to piece together, like, what was my motivation past... I reckon if I write these deep songs, I will get famous eventually.
Was that, like, so at the time, were you keen for fame?
I think I had a nylon string acoustic guitar and I basically was like in my bedroom pretending that I was on stage at something with like an acoustic, like with an electric guitar and a band and we'd rock it.
So you must, at the time, you must have been pretty confident about those songs.
To myself, and maybe to anyone I might have wanted to collaborate in a band with.
Well, that's what I mean. You were happy to share them with other people. Like, you didn't hide them in the box straight away?
I don't know about these. Some of them, yeah, I probably would have been like, oh, we've got a band together, I'll share it with the band. And then we didn't really have a band because we didn't play anything together. Mm. And then, yeah, they probably were just things I might have shown to, like, one person or another. But yeah, probably they just went in a folder and I was like, I'll just leave them for once I'm famous and then I can go back into the file and find the old classics that I wrote when I was 14 and be like, yeah, don't have to even write a song now I'm famous because I already wrote them when I was 14.
You still write now?
Yeah.
So has there ever been a point between now and then that you've stopped writing songs?
I didn't really start consistently writing songs until I was about 22. I'd write like music on my guitar and try and put it together, but I wouldn't have any band to play it with or anything like that, right the way from like 12 all the way up to now. But to write a full song with like lyrics and stuff, I would basically, or just even writing down lyrics like these ones, I would just do it sporadically and be like, oh, I should write a song again. That was great. I remember writing a song, that was fun. And then I was like, oh, and then, you know, leave it for several months and then, oh, I'll probably write another one. And that probably just happened every so often, which possibly led to me writing songs now that I'm actually proud of.
Mm.
But, so it's all part of it.
Do you even now look at, like, say, anything that you'd written, say, 2 years ago and try and rewrite it? Or is it all just getting, like, locked away?
I think I try and write something and then maybe perform it. And then I've only really started kind of rewriting songs recently. Mostly it's just I kind of go, oh, that's done with, I can't get any more out of that, whereas now I kind of am trying to, as well, like with stand up and stuff, it's just you've got to kind of rework things and you find there's beats, like comedy beats, that you should be hitting, and if there's like long stretches of a song where I'm not kind of getting the funny out, then I need to rewrite that section because it might be like a good point, but it kind of loses momentum otherwise.
That's interesting. It's interesting what you say about comedy songwriting, because that's, I suppose that's very different from a more conventional song.
Yeah.
In that you're not thinking, even if, say, you're trying to get across a particular emotion in a song, like, say, if you're just trying to make people feel sad, you're not, I doubt many writers are thinking, oh, they've not felt this in
four lines or something.
Exactly.
Yeah. You can't go, like, are they experiencing love every four lines? You're just kind of oozing out an emotion, whether it's like happiness or romance or whatever, in a, when you're writing a more conventional song, whereas in comedy songs you are kind of like joke, and like subverting things, and it's all, you're just kind of either going for the laugh or building up for the laugh.
Mm. So when did you jump from writing conventional songs to comedy songs?
So when I was at uni, I started doing music open mic nights, and I think this is the main thing that you'll probably discover from these lyrics and things, is that I always wanted to be a musician. I don't have the talent or the conviction to be a serious musician. And so I would go to these open mic nights and perform badly. I could shred in my bedroom on my electric guitar, but you get me on stage and I could barely play three chords together and keep it in time. And my voice would go like four octaves too high. And so I would play songs that I wanted, like I just do covers and perform them badly. And then my friends would kind of laugh, but I kind of enjoyed the laughter. And then I'd point out mistakes I made more. And then I started doing medleys and trying to like link together songs and like do that intricately. And whilst I was doing all of this, my friend who was running the open mic night played a funny song that somebody else had written. And everyone kind of stopped what they were doing and sat around and watched and laughed. And it was really engaging. And I was like, that looks great. I'm going to try that. But just like for the next open mic night, like a month later. And so I wrote like one song, and then that went well. And then I was like, oh, that was fun. Maybe I could try and write some other silly songs. And then wrote like three or four more. And then was performing those in amongst still like covers and things. And then slowly but surely the covers went away, and then I just started writing more and more funny songs.
So you've also brought with you an example of later writing. So this is a lyric book from when you were 19. What's its title on the front?
Davy's Banging Lyrics, Yo. So the Grebo song is actually in this book. And songs like I Bought a High School Musical T-shirt and Now Everyone Thinks I'm Gay.
So you had started writing comedy songs at this point?
Not at this point. This is just like, those are like way later in this book. These were just, I just found a place to write them down. But at the beginning of this book, there's something called Reflectrem. And I remember writing, I'd got music software by this point and could record into it. And I'd recorded a guitar and layered it up with some other things like a bass and like a synthesizer. And then I was like, I'll try and write some lyrics to that. I've written lyrics before. I could probably do it. And it went like this. The sun has gone, the day is long, you are still young, and the fire burns bright for you. Remember, son, the journey's long to the dragon's tongue.
To the what, sorry?
The dragon's tongue. But the trail is there for you, one in front of the other shoe.
Is shoe capitalized?
No. But it looks remarkably similar to the way I've spelt shone in the next line. The light has shone on the trail that's long, and so we will venture on till we find out what's true, what's left for me and you.
It's some classic rhyming at the end.
It kind of drifts into kind of like, oh yeah, the kind of like an end of the day sort of song.
Yeah.
Of which many have been written. And then in the middle of that, I'm just like, to the dragon's tongue.
Yeah, that's such a weird lyric.
It just violently drifts off,
yeah,
into fantasy and then back into reality.
Like that, the dragon's tongue sounds like a great pub. The name of a great pub.
Yeah. Go have a cheeky half down the dragon's tongue.
So what kind of music was that? Was that intended for then? Like electronic?
So like kind of soft electric guitar. I could probably actually still play the actual music that went to it. But like soft electric guitar. I remember really wanting to try and write music in the style of the Go Team. Do you know the Go Team?
Oh, yeah.
But not like the really rambunctious. I kind of wanted to write the band rambunctious stuff as well, but not like that, but like the kind of like subdued stuff, which is like really pleasant.
Is this song actually about anything, or is it another attempt of just writing a song?
I think so. I think the latter. I remember, so me and my friend had, in between this, I'd been in a group. Group is a strong word. I'd been in a duet called Whore Kelly 3000 with my friend Andy Kelly, who's like he's really big in the Bristol improv scene, and he's really, really great improviser. But we wanted to write music together, and we tried to write serious music together, and he'd actually been in comedy bands before that, but he was a lot better at being sincere, and we tried writing stuff together. I've just remembered we wrote a song together that I regret as well with him, but that's fine. Sorry, I'm completely veered off.
Why
here.
Do you regret that? What is that flashback?
I wrote a song. So I think, as you're saying, you're rightly pointing out, I basically would just try and write a song with no point. And I think the first time I probably didn't write it with no point. I probably still even possibly didn't have point. I wrote a song about the book Mortal Engines because I just read it and I liked bands that had written songs about books. And I was like, I'll do that. But it's like a weird sort of dystopian, like teen fiction about airships.
Right.
And yeah, I tried to write like a meaningful song about it.
Is this one of those songs that use the word utopia?
Quite possibly. Musically, that song was actually all right. I still quite like that. But I think somebody played it to me recently and I was just sat there being like, oh, no, that's bad. I think it's on MySpace.
Wow.
But after that, I remember being like, we could venture into more serious realms and try and amp the Go Team. And I've got the ability to layer up stuff. So why don't I try and write stuff? And this is what I came up with. And I'm pretty sure I never presented it to Andy with these lyrics, so...
Oh, so this is the first anyone's ever heard this one.
Oh, yeah.
Which is why the shame is hot.
Yeah, can you see the shame on me? Is it visible?
Look, it's so interesting. It's when someone starts putting their hands through their hair, that's when you know... Like, it's as if you're trying to wipe away...
The shame.
Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah.
So at the time you were in this duet, or you had moved on?
We were at university and like I was in Leeds and he was in Exeter, so there was no way of us really collaborating. But I think the idea was I was going to write stuff at uni and then take it back, because Andy and I always hang out. We did our band during the summer. We did it for like 3 summers in a row. We'd like meet up and play like every couple of days and jam for an hour, then play Mario Kart for an hour, then jam for an hour, play Mario Kart for an hour, watch The Simpsons, eat dinner and then go home. So I was hoping when I came back after uni, because I was doing like a music tech degree, so I probably had some like grand idea in my head of being like, well, I've probably got access to make something good. Why don't I start working on something great?
So when did you stop playing together?
I don't think we ever got back together to do this bit. So probably about 2009, 2010, I think. So probably like second year of uni.
Kind of when you realised that working together was not going to be feasible.
Yes. And it's like, yeah, you come home from uni and it's just like... if you when you're not speaking together all the time because you're at uni and stuff and you're living your own lives, and then you just think, oh, I'll go back in the summer and everyone will be there, and then eventually people will actually just started having their own lives and doing everything else, and what you thought you could just kind of fall back into just goes away.
That's so true of even say now. So I live in Bristol now, but my family live in Norfolk, and every time that I go back to Norfolk a bit like to visit them, I think, oh, I can go see some of my friends who I used to hang out with, but now there's about two or three of them now left actually living even in Norfolk itself, you know, people do just spread out and their lives entangle with other people. And then it's like what you remember being the social groups don't exist anymore.
Yeah, it's, I think you could kind of like imagine it like a kind of TV town, sort of like a Simpsons sort of thing, where like if you just went back to it, it'd all still be the same.
Mm.
But you've gone on with your life, so everyone else will have done as well. Like, they're not just sitting around waiting, like, I wonder when Daryl's going to come back, and when's David coming back to Harpenden, then we can all do the things that he likes to do. That's just not... But we'll just wait for him whilst he goes and lives his life, and then we'll, that's not how life works at all. And so you probably come up with great ideas, like, next time I see them, we'll do that, and then you don't see him for ages, and then the next time you see him, you've forgotten about it, or you're, like, drunk down the pub, or what have you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So what we're going to do to end this episode is actually listen to some of the music that you produced when you were younger.
Yeah.
So what are we about to listen to?
So I think when I was about 17, 18, I'd started doing music technology at school, and we'd got access to MIDI, so I could program in MIDI, and I was doing it for school, so I was doing it like every day or at least every week.
Was it stuff like Fruity Loops?
I was using Cubase, but it was like probably Cubase 3, maybe earlier. And so that coincided with like the discovery of like Pendulum and The Prodigy. And I remember having this kind of like, I'm going to try and write a song like Pendulum. This is really exciting. I reckon I could write something on using this software that people will dance to. And I was really quite serious about like, I'm going to make the next like Prodigy song, the next Pendulum song. I think those are the only two things in drum and bass I'd ever really even heard of. And so I made this.
And what's it called?
It's called Active Theory. And I believe it's called that because I looked around the room I was in and I saw a box with the word active on it. And I looked around and saw another one, and there was a driving theory test.
And had you at this point given yourself a name?
I hadn't. It later went on MySpace under the name Hardcore Whore.
You've got such a malleable surname.
It's good, isn't it? I think under potentially a release called Raven Dave. But yeah.
Right, so this is Active...
Just the fact that you're saying it like that. This is Active Theory. Yeah.
So I went all like radio presenter. Yeah. So this next hot one is...
Hardcore Whore.
This is Hardcore Whore.
Turn the bass up on this one.
This is Active Theory.
That's some wind for effect. I think I was attempting to be atmospheric.
Sounds like a Final Fantasy boss.
I was playing a lot of Final Fantasy at that time.
Ha ha ha! so distorted.
No idea of what sound levels are. Everything as loud as everything else.
The hardest thing as an audio producer is looking at the waveform of this and just seeing a block of sound. It's horrible to look at.
You could turn it into a green screen and like put GIFs over it. And what I reckon I did is I probably sat with my guitar and tried to write melodies and then put it into synthesizers. And probably sat there going, this doesn't sound quite as cool as Pendulum. But how do you... How do you make it sound that good? I remember now there's some claps. So the people in the clubs, which I'd never been to at this point, could clap along to. I believe like Enter Shikari were big at this time as well, so clapping was...
It does sound more like Enter Shikari than Pendulum or... I suppose there is a little bit of them, but it does sound a lot like an Enter Shikari kind of feel. Because they had a lot of that high synth.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, this is clearly the... We're coming up to the end. The big drop.
I don't give it away that there's a false end.
Yeah!
You don't have to do
it. It sounds like it's going to continue a lot the same for the rest of the song.
I nearly told you to shut up. Shut up, that's my work I've worked on, but yeah, no. There's some more claps in there just so that they can, you know.
Well, we're coming. We'll listen to the whole thing. Yeah. We're coming up towards the end.
A little bit of variety there, I went lower. You look stunned.
What a treat. How does that feel?
Sharing it with others is difficult but kind of fun. Like my body is like, I feel tight and stiff. I probably look way less relaxed than I was before.
Yeah, you're holding your chest.
Yeah, I feel awful.
And why is that?
She's not here. What it looks like and what the waveform looks like. I remember trying really hard. I thought I was making something really cool, and then I invited my friend Johnny around, who I knew had listened to Pendulum like way longer than I had, and I played it to him and he just kind of laughed and he was like, this is not what Pendulum are about at all. And I thought he was a bit of a dick for a bit, and then slowly realised that I just made something really stupid. But I tried so hard.
Was there a moment when you started feeling that you didn't like it anymore and kind of hated it?
Well, the weird thing is I've made music subsequently that I really enjoy and didn't finish it or bounce it down. That is in like a tangible state that I can show you. So I liked it enough that I was like, yeah, I've done this and I'm going to bounce it down and put it into a MP3.
And put it on MySpace.
And put it on MySpace. I think by the time I put it on MySpace, I realised that it might be not very good and quite funny. I'm kind of speechless. I think I tried really hard to, and I did it, because it's kind of like a full song, even though it's not very, it doesn't change very much. And then, yeah, I think I liked it all the way through making it and then started showing it to people and then quickly realised that what I'd done. I think I showed it to like one person and then... Well, I know, but I put it on MySpace. But I think at that point, being online wasn't the same as it is now, where like only certain people online can see what you were doing back then, whereas now it's a lot more universal.
I suppose also if you're putting music onto like a MySpace page, it wasn't necessarily clear that it was you personally who had put it up there.
Yes, although I think the picture of my face might have
alerted
other people to it. But what you're saying is completely true as well. I remember trying really hard, thinking I'm going to make something that people will dance to. Let me write to Daryl if you dance to that. You listen to it. Oh, I'm kind of sweating right now. This is...
Oh. Are you happy that you shared that with me?
Yes. It feels like a big release to show stuff that is kind of rubbish from my past that I can, like, laugh at now. Because taking yourself way too seriously is bad. And it's also kind of nice to see, like, sometimes I think, oh, I used to write lyrics that were pretty good, and then I'll go through stages of writer's block and be like, I used to be way better. And when I was a teenager, I was kind of carefree and writing stuff. Why can't I be like that now? But looking back at what I'd written then, I'm quite glad at where I've got to now, to a state where I can, like, happily perform songs to people and, like, eager to show them, rather than, like, writing it down, being excited about it for a day, and then just putting it in a book and never seeing it again. So it's kind of fun to revisit and think about how I've got to a stage where, as a result of writing these songs, it probably, there's a through line from that to me becoming, like, friends with you, for example, because I kept on wanting to do music and writing songs and then failed upwards to a point where I was just, like, singing silly songs instead of...
That's such an interesting concept, the idea of failing upwards.
I completely reckon that's what I've done.
But that's such a positive way of looking at, you got something a bit wrong, but then the next thing is better.
Uh-huh.
And so actually, that wasn't a failure, because that's helped the next great thing.
Oh, yeah. It's all just a stepping stone to, like, the greatest failure would be just to abandon it all, because you can't do anything right. Like, you're not going to immediately just be good at something. You have to be bad at something for a while and then get better at it. And it turns out that I didn't really even kind of contemplate until you've asked me to, like, find these lyrics, that I have been writing lyrics for quite a while, actually. And so when it actually came for a time for me to kind of write lyrics that I thought I'd actually want to perform in public, there was probably like a, well, I know that if you can rhyme not only just the song at the end of the lyric at the end of the line, but you can also have rhymes in between, or you can have like two lines that rhyme and then one line that doesn't, and then two more lines that rhyme and then a line that rhymed with the line that didn't rhyme and stuff, and you can build structures and things. But I would have done that while singing about dragon's tongues and stuff like that.
If you're able to go back in time and speak to yourself back when you had literally just started writing lyrics,
yeah,
is there any advice that you would have wanted to have given yourself?
Keep going. People do actually like you. That's probably just separate to songwriting. No self-confidence. Yeah, just keep writing and just keep making. Because the more you create, the kind of more likely you are to actually come up with something good. That and people aren't. Not everyone hates you.
I feel like I could go into that, but that's for a different podcast. Thank you so much for joining me, David.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're about to do the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Yeah.
Where can people see you?
So from the 12th to the 20th, Dorian Wainwright and myself are going to be in the Black Market room 2. At like 12:15. So if you're drunkenly stumbling around the centre of Edinburgh late at night and you want to come see a free show, come see some musical comedy and a ginger man talking about his life. I'm sure he'll be fine with that description.
If people can't make it to Edinburgh, how can they find you?
If you go on YouTube and just type in David Hoare, Hoare, I'm one of the first things that comes up there. I'm also on Twitter under Treehead89, and I really wish that wasn't my Twitter handle. It's kind of based off a nickname that my friend gave me, the inventor of the internet's nephew. I was at school with him. He gave me the nickname Treehead once, and I thought, that's cool, because I didn't understand what cool was for a long time, as shown with these lyrics and songs. And so, yeah, he called me that because I changed my hair quite a lot in an attempt to be cool.
Again, so many more questions. Different podcast. Thank you, David. Thank you for listening to I'd Sooner Forget This. I've been Daryl Smith. My guest this week was David Hoare. If you just have a few moments of free time, then could you please give this podcast a review and share it? 5 stars on iTunes would be amazing. If you haven't got the time for that, then just stick around and subscribe for the next episode. Thank you. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.